Today, I'm going to give you a little bit of secret North Carolina history and tell you about America's only successful coup d'etat. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is the bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. And if you're returning for episode 100, whatever we're on, thank you for coming back. And thank you for not judging me for how I say coup d'etat. I'm not certainly not French. I'm assuming I'm saying it as right as I can. But again, thank you for not judging me. And even though I joke, today's episode is going to be kind of a sad one. It's kind of a tragic episode. But I had said when I first started this show that, you know, there was a few episodes where a few subject matters where I really wasn't comfortable going in, you know, covering these things. And, you know, I realized a long time ago, you can't have anything good if you don't have anything bad. I know that sucks, but that is the way it is. And not all of our state's history or our country's history is positive, and this is going to be one of those pretty negative stories. However, I think it's a story that needs to be told. I think we can't learn from history if we don't learn history. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and get into it, and I'll throw in all the promotional stuff at the end, you know, the Facebook and all that. That'll be at the end. So let's go ahead and get into the Wilmington Massacre. And yeah, I forgot to mention in those few minutes at the beginning that this story, if you want to look it up, it's called the Wilmington Massacre. And it was the only successful coup d'etat in American history. And the last thing, this episode was suggested by my wife, Jamie. She actually suggested it a few times. And so thank you, Jamie, for the suggestion. So this episode takes us to the 1890s, or specifically 1890, I think. No, I was right the first time. We are in the 1890s, and I'll get down to the more specific dates in a minute. But one thing I want to establish going in, a lot of you, especially older folks and history buffs, y'all know this, but back then, right after the Civil War, before and right after the Civil War, Democrats and Republicans, they were a lot different than what they are today. The Republican Party, who loved Abraham Lincoln, they were in favor of integration and progression, where the Democrats, they were for segregation. They didn't want anything to do with mixing blacks and whites. All right, so let me give you a little bit of background. Since I'm not talking about one person, I don't have a backstory. So the background, before the incident that was the Wilmington Massacre, Wilmington was pretty peaceful. They were integrated and progressive. And this was mostly due to fusion politics. You see, the poor white farmers who made up the Populist Party, well, they joined up with the Republicans around Wilmington. And because of the population of African-Americans living in and around Wilmington, this Republican Party just happened to be mostly made up of freed African-Americans. And because of the sheer number of poor white farmers and freed African-Americans around Wilmington, it didn't take long before they took the political majority. And since they took the political majority, it didn't take long for them to win every statewide government office in 1896, including the governorship itself. And it wasn't too long after this that black men and some women, they held positions of power all around Wilmington. And this wasn't just city government. There were black police officers, firemen, nurses, all different roles that you really wouldn't think a black person would hold in 1890. And Wilmington was even where the first black newspaper in the country started. This was the Wilmington Daily Record. And keep that in mind because it does come back in just a minute. Now, despite how peaceful and progressive Wilmington was, as always, there was a certain portion of the population who wouldn't have any of it. And these were the Democrats. And Democrat, a lot of them around Wilmington were made up of former Confederates or Confederate sympathizers. And so a lot of the Democrats, they vowed to end this quote-unquote Negro domination. they plan to do it through the polls, which sounds kind of peaceful. You know, you're doing things the right way. Now, they did plan on waiting for the 1898 election. But here's the plan. And it's not civil. It's not honest. It's downright dirty. So you got the fusionist, which is, like I said, poor white farmers and freed African-Americans. But in this story, you're mostly dealing with the African-Americans. On the other side, you had the white supremacists, and they were led by future Governor Charles Aycock, Josephus Daniels, the publisher of the News and Observer, and a former congressman and Confederate soldier named Alfred Waddell, who I'll speak about more than the others. So Daniels, he uses the News and Observer. He uses the News and Observer to make fake claims that blacks were taken over, and he was really trying to raise fear, you know, fearmonger, and get everybody riled up, and it was working. Around the same time, writer and future U.S. Senator Rebecca Felton, well, she gave a speech, and during her speech, she was quoted as saying that she'd be okay with lynching a black man every day if it meant protecting white women. She said her goal was, quote, to protect women's dearest possessions from the ravening human beast, unquote. Now, two things, if you hadn't gathered by that. They're trying to portray black men as just, I mean, obviously they're trying to dehumanize them, but they're trying to paint them as this lethal creature. You know, you got to be careful or he's going to take your, your dearest possession, which I'm not assuming, for a woman, your dearest possession in her eyes is your vagina. And so they didn't want to, she was trying to paint it out like these black men were just, I guess, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but they were after white vaginas. Now, of course, Alfred Waddell had to add his two cents in a speech that he gave a few weeks later. He said, now that guy Alfred Waddell, the former Confederate soldier I was talking about, he added his two cents in a speech he gave a few weeks later when he said, quote, let them understand once and for all that we will have no more of the intolerable conditions under which we live. We are resolved to change them if we have to choke the current of the Cape Fear with carcasses, unquote. And so he essentially saying that we'll kill them all and throw them into the river. And even if it stops the flow of the river, if that's what it takes to get our white power back, that's what we're going to do. And so they were, you know, obviously trying to make trouble wherever they could. Then you got Alexander Manly. Alexander Manly was the editor of that black newspaper I mentioned earlier, the Daily Record. And in his newspaper, he was responding to that comment about lynching a black man every day. He condemned lynching and pointed out the hypocrisy of trying to dehumanize black people by calling them big burly brutes. I guess that's what was in there. He really talked against it, but he triggered a lot of people when he commented that it's a lot of times white men who are raping white women. And then he went on further to say that some relations between black men and white women were actually consensual. And this really, really enraged everybody. Because first, he's saying that you're raping your own people. It ain't us. And then he goes on and says, well, when we do have sex, it's consensual. You know, your women like it. So, you know, and I ain't got to describe everything like that to you. But you can see when tensions are high already, this talking shit back and forth is really going to set things off. And it really, really did. Well, the white supremacists, you know, they kept on with their, you know, mess and fake stories, and they kept having rallies and getting everybody riled up. And then when the election came in November, all hell broke loose. The day before the election, Alfred Waddell, he gave another speech, and he demanded that white men, quote unquote, do your duty and look for black people who are voting. And if you find one, he said, tell them to leave the polls, and if he refuses, kill, shoot him down in his tracks. We shall win tomorrow if we have to do it with guns. And I'm not trying to go on a too much of a train here, but, you know, him saying that we're going to win tomorrow even if we have to do it with guns. Well, if you're cheating, it's not really winning. You know, and maybe that's just splitting hairs here. Ultimately, it doesn't matter now. Well, the morning of Election Day came, and the white supremacists, they hit the road. And they patrolled black neighborhoods looking for anybody heading for the polls. And for the few people they missed, you know, the people that got around them and made it to the polls, they were patrolling the polls and they were running people off, threatening people. And they scared most of the black people away from the polls. And so, of course, they won every seat that they were running for. The whites, the Democrats, won every seat that they were running for. That same day, the White Declaration of Independence was posted, published, not posted. We're a few years before posting things. The White Declaration of Independence was published, and that's not a nickname I'm giving it. That's what they called it, the White Declaration of Independence. And it stated that we, the undersigned citizens, do hereby declare that we will no longer be ruled and will never again be ruled by men of African origin. Now, I didn't try to look up this White Declaration of Independence, but one big takeaway from the White Declaration was that it stripped Wilmington citizens of their right to vote. It also banned black people from holding any office in Wilmington. And though this probably wasn't in the White Declaration of Independence, the white supremacists on their own demanded that Alexander Manley, the editor of the black newspaper, they demanded he leave town, which at some point he did. I read that he survived. He fled up north and escaped the violence down here. Now, I say all hell broke loose on Election Day. It's bad right now, but it hadn't really broke off yet. We hadn't got to the real hell yet. But just in what I've stated so far, you think that somebody would reach out to the, you know, the president and ask for help. Well, they did. And I guess the president wasn't taking requests that day. It said that he ignored every call for help during all of this. And not just these 2 days or these few days, for the rest of the 20th century. No president ever really, for the rest of the 20th century, things didn't change down here. But for the rest of this decade, nobody tried to help or intervene. Anyway, I don't want to jump to closing thoughts before I finish the story. So the day after the election, November 10th, Waddell, he got up with 2,000 armed men, and they went to the Daily Record, and they burned it down. From here, the 2,000 white supremacists, they moved to City Hall. They forced the sitting mayor out. They told him to, I guess, get out of town too. And they named Alfred Waddell Wilmington's new mayor. Well, it didn't take too long before the rumors of this coup d'etat started spreading around Wilmington. And so that hell that I was talking about breaking loose, this is where it really ignited. So we're at the corners of 4th and Harnett Street in Wilmington. And there you have Walker's Grocery Store, which is a black-owned grocery store, and Brunji's Saloon, which is owned by whites. So blacks are on one side, whites are on the other. Arguments, screaming, chaos ensues. And finally, a shot was fired. And somebody, nobody really knows who, somebody yelled, "White man killed, white man killed." And that's when a ton of gunfire kind of erupted from the crowd. And black men started running for their lives, and they were gunned down. And from here, the gun violence just spread from the corners of those two streets all around Wilmington. So the Wilmington Light Infantry, who were white supremacists, or made up mostly of, the White Government Union, enough said, and the Red Shirts. I didn't look into them, but I'm assuming the Red Shirts are also white people. I don't know if they were out of white shirts. These three groups, they poured into Wilmington and poured into the black neighborhoods of Wilmington. And with them, they didn't have their hunting rifles like a lot of the other Wilmington citizens did. They brought sniper rifles and a Gatling gun. So down on the streets, bullets are flying everywhere. Men are dropping like flies. Meanwhile, Alfred Waddell, he's up at town hall. Now that he's the mayor, he throws out the city alderman and he elects his own, or he chooses his own alderman. As far as the black leaders that they already had in Wilmington, well, they were jailed, you know, quote unquote, for their own safety. And then they were led down to the train station, forcibly put on a train, and sent out of town. By the end of the riot, a lot of black people had died. And what makes me kind of sad is they don't really know how many. I read 4 or 5 different articles for this podcast, and every one of them say it was anywhere from 60 to 250. I mean, that's a That's a huge margin, 60 to 250 men. They don't really know for sure. Now, I started that last sentence out with after the riot. The riot did, come to a or calm down, but the effects kind of rippled out from there. Because after the riot, thousands of black citizens in Wilmington, well, they got the hell out of the city. But this, I don't know if fever pitch is the right word. That's not a word I use a lot. But this white fever spread around the whole state. In 1900, the North Carolina legislature, they pretty much took away African Americans' right to vote through some sort of grandfather clause. And then they brought in these really harsh Jim Crow laws. The number of registered black voters in Wilmington dropped from 125,000 in 1896 to about 6,000 in 1902. And I just said that was in Wilmington. That may have been the North Carolina number. Not just Wilmington. I didn't put a note here, but I feel like that's a North Carolina number. So we'll say North Carolina voters, black voters, the registered black voters dropped from 125,000 in 1896 to 6,000 in 1902. And that's, again, an astounding number. Now, as far as the white supremacists go, what they did right after the incident, well, they went on damage control. And they pretty much stayed on damage control for the next 100 years. You see, North Carolina newspapers, media, schools, and institutions, well, they would describe this Wilmington massacre not as a massacre, but as a racial incident that was started by black aggression. Now, I'm not going to keep kicking a dead horse here, but they lied and said it was started by black aggression. Now, the story, as you now know it, the real only real black aggression, and I'm sure I'm missing something. I'm sure blacks fought back, but and I'm sure there were some shit-talking black guys down there too, but the real black aggression that I could only... The only real black aggression I could find to all this was the publisher of the black newspaper saying that white men rape white women, not black men. And that doesn't sound that bad. I feel like I'm getting hung up on my words here. He defended his own. He said white men rape white women also. And sometimes white women love black men. And that was, I guess that was the black aggression that they tried to hide behind for 100 years. And as far as ripple effects go, the biggest ripple I felt like was that no black citizen served in public office in Wilmington until 1972. So it would take 70 years before a black man held office in Wilmington again. It would be 90 years before a black citizen from North Carolina was elected to Congress. That was 1992. And if you're wondering, how many white people got in trouble during all this, that number is zero. Like I said, President McKinley, he ignored cries for help. He was not interested in all at trying to end this coup d'etat, and he sure wasn't interested in helping the black people at all. So with that being said, I'm sure he wasn't very interested in punishing any white people. And that's the end of this episode. That's the end of the only successful coup d'etat in American history. And that's the end of the Wilmington Massacre. And, I talked about them trying to, I call it a secret history at the beginning because they did try to hide it. They did. This is one of those things you don't talk about. And if you do talk about it, well, it was the black people's fault. I'm 40 years old. I'll be 41 in a couple months. And I had never heard this story. I've been in North Carolina my whole life, and I've never heard this story. And that's an issue for me. I'm not saying force feed anybody any black history, but I don't know. That's an issue for me. I'm not just trying to promote the podcast here, but I do love North Carolina. I do love North Carolina history. And that's a part of North Carolina history that was intentionally kept from me for all these years. But maybe that's where my podcast can help. Some of the history that we're not supposed to talk about, maybe my podcast can help there. Anyway, I hope this wasn't a triggering episode. I should have put a warning at the beginning. I completely forgot. It certainly wasn't a nice episode, but it is our history. And maybe this is a bad time to promote myself. But if you did like the episode or you're interested in more episodes, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And check out the links below. I lost my train of thought. If you're listening on a podcast player and you'd like to put a face with a name, check out the links below. And there's a link for my YouTube channel where I think the majority of my episodes now are on YouTube. I think I recorded 35 or 40 before I started doing YouTube. There'll also be a link down there for the NC Everything Podcast Facebook group. It sounds like a mouthful, but it's not hard to get into. I don't have any security questions. Don't come in there starting trouble, but join the Facebook group and you can get more NC Everything. And if that's still not enough NC Everything, you can check the links out for Tasting NC. That's a show I do with my wife where we taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. And that's a monthly show, so it's a lot less episodes. But I've had a lot of fun. I wish I could get her on the podcast more. I have a lot of fun recording with her. And so you can watch us eat food, talk about food, and rate food. And if you have an episode for if you have an idea for an episode, you can reach out to me at thenceverythingpodcast@gmail.com. I'll put that down in the description. I'm not sure if that turns into a link or not, but that's the email address, and you can suggest an episode too. Anyway, that's all I have for this episode, so I guess I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.